From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Monday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this morning. Block 20 of Ole Miss baseball as the Rebels go to Baton Rouge and win a series for the first time since 1982, back ending the series, losing on Friday before a 5-1 win on Saturday, and then a pretty wild 19-15 10-inning victory on Sunday to take the series. So we'll get into that and much more today on the show, brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon and Blue Sky there on Highway 6 West in Oxford. Go in, get your lunch specials. Today you can get chicken spaghetti, two sides bread, 32-ounce drink for $4.99. Ribs tonight on the way home from work, maybe call ahead. They'll have them wrapped up and ready to go, wet or dry, whatever you'd like. They'll have it for you there at Blue Sky. You can save money at the pump with the Mobile Rewards Program, the SpeedPass Plus app, and much more. So it's Blue Sky in Oxford. Again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call that number and ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no hassle. There's no haggle. Really, if you think you're in the market for a vehicle, if you think you're soon to be in the market for a vehicle, you sort of owe it to yourself to call Corey, get a quote. At the very least, it's going to be a baseline for you moving forward. And it just might do for you what it's done for me and a lot of others, and that's get you into a Ford vehicle. You'll love the product. You'll love the service after the sale, delivery options. Corey wants to be your truck guy, wants to be your car guy. He will prove it to you. All you have to do is make that call, and you'll start finding out what I'm talking about. 662-257-1900. Tell Corey at the end of the deal that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast, and you'll save $500 off your already great bottom line.
So, really just a couple huge gut checks for Ole Miss. Again, you lose the opener. You're in Baton Rouge, where they have not had any success in, frankly, 37 years. They don't get swept. They just lose 2 out of 3. They had lost 2 out of 3 every time a Mike Bianco team had gone down there, and really, it got started on Saturday with Doug Nikhazy. He was excellent. He was excellent again. Over a three-week period, he has beaten Tanner Burns. He has beaten Asa Lacy of Texas A&M. He's going to be a very high draft pick in a year. And then he goes into Alex Box and evens the series on Saturday. It's sometimes hard to give a pitcher the MVP. He might be the MVP of this team just because I don't know where they would be without him at this point. And then yesterday looked like catastrophe, I'll be honest. You're up 10-1 at one point, I think in the fifth inning when it was 10-1. LSU kind of just sort of slowly gets back into it, still don't think it's a big deal. Ole Miss continues to add on and add on and add on. And then with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, it is 15-9. And where you look up next, a couple hits. There was one nubber that kind of got past Caracy that I thought was the only cheap hit of the inning for the most part. And then home run, home run, home run, tie game. And I know probably every Ole Miss person in the stadium's heart sank when the next ball went in the air, but it was caught pretty easily by Olenek in center field, if I remember correctly. So they get to the 10th, and that's where the other one comes into play, because Mike, give him a lot of credit for steadying those guys, team leaders for steadying those guys. It had been really easy to fold after that ninth inning. Instead, they come right back. They get a double from Kevin Graham. They get a walk from Cooper Johnson. Josh Hall, who was in the game as a defensive substitution, gets the big hit to score two. They add on, end up winning the game 19-15. Houston Roth gets the final out of the game there. So it was a swing game. It did so much from a resume standpoint. We'll get to that. But just from a psyche, just from, you know, really showing a lot of mental toughness, Neil, there was a couple of different times over the weekend, and especially in that 10th inning, because you're talking about, frankly, you're talking about a potential emotional dagger in so many ways, and instead they bypassed that and, frankly, kind of turned it into a bit of a galvanizing moment for them.
So I didn't see Friday night. I didn't see Saturday. And most of yesterday I missed it because I was at Caroline's dance recital at the Ford Center. So I got back to the house at about, it was 5-ish, a little after 5 maybe, and turned it on, and I think Ole Miss was ahead, I don't know, 11-4-ish something like that.
That's fair.
And I had it on, and I wasn't glued to it. I had some stuff to do. I needed to. We got tons of rain on Saturday. I had to flush the pool. I was lighting the grill. I had stuff going on, and it's a 7-run game. You're not paying a lot of attention to it. And then, of course, it got to 15-9 or whatever it was, and there were two outs, and I guess a kid got a single, and my mom was over here, and she said, "It's not over yet." And I was like, "Come on, it's two outs with six-run lead.
Come it's on. Over."
It is. Next guy gets a hit, and then next guy gets a hit. And,
even after the first home run, you're kind of like, well, okay, but it's fine. No big deal. You know, 15-13, all good.
Well, once it got to 15-13, I was like, because you could see that he had nothing. Like, there's going to be, and I wrote about this in 10 Thoughts a little bit, there's going to be all the people that, you know, talk about what happened on Friday night with Bianco. To me,
yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, to me, that really wasn't the big questionable thing at all in my eyes. But leaving Krejci in, I still can't say his name, so I'm just going to call him Parker. Leaving Parker in when it was obvious he had nothing was the mind-boggling thing to me, and it might have been because there's just nobody else to go to.
I would have had someone up, even if it was Roth. I thought the bigger criticism, and now I don't know the answer here, because baseball has really cracked down in college on number of mound visits, but even if it was Cooper, I thought doing anything to mess up the rhythm was important right there, and probably the biggest criticism of Mike over the course of the weekend, because it just felt like we're just playing baseball, and you get the ball back, and you throw it, and you throw it, and throw it, and it's there's never that thing... There's never that thing to kind of change it a little bit, to slow it down, to chill out. I mean, it basically the baseball version of when the spread offense football team's on the field and one of the linebackers just lays down and make them come out to get him. Just anything to kind of create a little bit of a stoppage in this to slow it down.
Yeah, I don't know that it would have mattered. The way he was throwing, I mean, he didn't have command and he didn't have a lot of velo, and it was fat. And, I mean, he threw some pitches in that ninth inning that, I mean, he just put them on a tee, and he wasn't trying to. I think the tank was empty.
He had thrown on Friday. He frankly didn't have a ton in the eighth, but he got through it okay.
Yeah, we got the double playground ball.
Yeah,
there were some warning signs in the eighth. You're right, because they were hitting him a little bit, and then he got the double play, and got out of it. And at that point, you know, you think, well, they're good, and they're going to cruise, and. You know the rest, but like you said, if you've ever played in one of those games, you know how that momentum swing impacts you. And then if you've ever been to one of those games, covered one of those games, like everybody listening to this has, you know how those usually the team that forces the overtime wins the overtime just because they have momentum. And LSU, man, had all the momentum. Like I remember after – I guess Miller got the last out in the whoever got the last out.
It was Miller in the ninth, yeah.
Yeah. They showed the cutaway, as they should have, of the LSU dugout. And, like, those kids were putting their caps and catcher's gear and stuff on. They couldn't wait to get to the field. I mean, let's go get three outs. Let's come back in here and win this thing. I mean, their body language was kind of like Rizzo, my Labrador Retriever, when I said, hey, you want to go for a walk? It's ball game. Yeah, not only do I want to go for a walk, it's the only thing in the world I would ever want to do right this moment. They were ready to roll. And for Ole Miss to come out and get a couple of hits and then get a big hit and then take advantage of opportunities and end up getting the four spot was, you know, I mean, it's you don't have to be a genius to know this. I mean, if they end up having anything resembling a special season, you'll look back on that moment. You'll look back on the top of the 10th, and then Houston Roth was really good in the bottom of the 10th, and they got the win, and at the end of the day, it's just something you can laugh about. Had it gone the other way, I think we're having a stunningly different conversation about the program, really. I mean, I think it was indeed that big. I looked at my parents were over here because they've gone to Caroline's recital too, and I told my dad after the night, I said, let me check the message board. And, I mean, it was...
fire.
It was vitriolic, as you might imagine. And, yeah. I don't think... I don't think as a program they would have recovered from that. That's my honest opinion. I think it was that big. But as they stand today, they needed to get two. They got two. Doesn't matter how you get two. The beauty pageant portion of the season is long over. They got them, and they have 15 wins with 2 weekends to go. They probably have to get to 18, so that's using my ULM math, 3-3 the rest of the way. They get Mississippi State at home. They're tied with State in the West, 2 games behind Arkansas, 15-9 each. There's a real opportunity for Ole Miss to finish second in the West.
Second in the West is directly in front of them right now, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think first in the West is probably a difficult task with the way Arkansas appears to be playing. But it's all there for them if they can just handle a really, really good Mississippi State team this weekend, get 2 out of 3 and go to Tennessee and try to get 2 out of 3. And I mean, that's not out of the question. And then you're 19-11 and you're hosting and all of the hyperbolic stuff that's been going on all year. And we've participated in it as well, is sort of out the door. And they exhale and say, well, we, you know, our goal was to host. We're hosting. I mean, and it's kind of that simple. Their RPI's in a great spot right now. Not all of their numbers, but most of their numbers look good, and they have survived. And to go down there and get 2 out of 3, it was the first time they'd done it in a gazillion years, and it was big. And that 10th inning was huge. And so, you know, you weren't going down there and sweeping LSU because nobody does that. So, you know, to go get 2 out of 3 was best case.
I thought what was interesting, a couple of different things with Maneri, what he was talking about all weekend, because he did not lessen the importance of Sunday on Saturday night. Nikhazy kind of shoves it up their tail on Saturday, and he tells his team, he tells the media that Sunday's game was maybe the most crucial one of the season, that the winner was going to likely host a regional, and the loser probably was not.
Yeah.
And then once the game was over, I also thought this was interesting too. He was worried about his guys. He LSU, with the big comeback, the way it went, I think he thought it was a more devastating loss than if they had just lost. I think he made a comment about how he thought it was going to be very difficult to hold Ole Miss down in the tent because LSU didn't have a lot of pitching either. They were warming up Hess there in the tent. He thought they had to win it in the ninth for a chance to win it, which is a little different than I thought, because I thought, oh, just get out of here, and then they've got all the momentum. But Maneri was very worried about the tenth, and I think he thinks that was a pivotal loss that is probably not only going to send them on the road, but something they've got to kind of recover from, because this has been an LSU team that's been very strange all season. They're still 14-10. They're not in bad shape in the SEC by any means, but they're odd. They're weird. They don't feel like the normal LSU team that we typically watch during the month of May, and I think they're a team that could be in a good bit of trouble moving forward. They just don't look right to me at this point.
I told you all weekend I thought that whoever won the weekend was in great shape to host a regional, and whoever lost the weekend was not. So good for Paul Maneri for saying it. I mean, it's just baseball. It's not life or death. I mean, you know, everybody's still going to get their juice box at the end of the day. He's right. If I'm him, I'm worried about my team right now. I'd much rather, honest to God, I'd much rather get beat 15-9 and everybody go have a couple of pops and a bowl of jambalaya when it's over and flush it and get ready for the next weekend than to get back into it and get to a place where, holy hell, man, we might win. And then you don't. That's tough. There's no doubt. I mean, that's, you know, kudos to him for saying it. He's right. Look, I just don't believe, and if I'm proven wrong, awesome, great. I'm happy for the league. So this isn't a negativity thing. I just don't believe the league's going to get an unlimited amount of host sites.
Yeah, I mean, they got 7 2 years ago is the problem with that theory.
I get that. I think if the NCAA selection committee can help it, they won't do that. That's what I'm trying to say. And so, you know, Arkansas is getting one. You know, Mississippi State's getting one. You know, Vanderbilt's getting one. You know, Georgia's getting one. And you feel at this point that Ole Miss is probably going to get one unless they play their way out of one.
Yeah, it's a deal where I wrote a good bit about this morning. You can find that for subscribers only at rebelgrove.com. It's linked at the top of the message board. I'll pin it out front later. Wrote a lot about RPI this morning. And Ole Miss is 17th in the RPI as of right now. They jumped up from 22, 23 at the start of the week. Probably in a little better shape than, frankly, I thought was possible. Six of their seven games left are against RPI top 10 teams. Tennessee, even though they're 10-14 in the SEC, they are number 10 in the RPI right now, but they're in trouble from an at-large bid standpoint, even at 10 in the RPI. And then Mississippi State is number 3 in the RPI, 15-9, tied with Ole Miss, and second in the SEC. So point being, Ole Miss is in really good shape if they can get to 18 from a host standpoint because of where that RPI is going to be. It's continuing moving up. And because it's a little bit softer of a top 16 than we see a lot of years. A lot of years that, you know, you've got host teams. We can kind of just go down the top 16 in the RPI, but Tennessee at 10 is not going to host. You look at Auburn at 15, they're not going to host. A&M right now is number 16 in the RPI. They're 12-11-1. They'd have to get red hot to host. And then you see Santa Barbara. I don't know what to do with them. I, again, wrote about this a little bit this morning, too. They are 36-7. They have a number 14 RPI right now. They have played three games against the top 50 RPI all season, and that's UC Irvine, who's number 48. So if Irvine falls three spots, do you give a host team that doesn't have a stadium to host in with zero top 50 games? I just don't think you do. So I think they're in trouble, especially considering that the West Coast has some hosts, so it's not that force the round peg into the square hole thing, because UCLA is going to be the number one overall seed. Stanford's going to host, even though their RPI right now is 22. They're going to host. And then Oregon State's probably either bubble in or bubble out host. They've fallen down to 23 in the RPI, but they're 17-4 in their league, and they have a reputation because they won the national championship last year. So they've got a shot. Point being, I think even at 17, if it ended today, Ole Miss would host at number 17. I think that we keep repeating that stat that no team outside the top 14 in the SEC has hosted since 2010. But this is a little different year. I think this is a year where that could happen. And frankly, I think it's a year where, at least to some extent, the SEC tournament does matter because there's so many RPI points at stake in Hoover this year. And because of the way these conference schedules are bearing out, I would not want to be the 5 seed that loses on Tuesday in Hoover, even at 18-12. I would be terrified of being the 5 seed that goes home after a day.
Yeah, we'll talk about this in a week or two. After last year, I'm just not convinced that the conference tournament matters.
Based on what?
Just last year, everybody got exactly what we kind of thought they'd get.
Yeah, but you didn't have that team lose immediately, I guess is my point.
Yeah, I guess so.
If I'm a 17 RPI and I lose on Tuesday, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, it's probably true.
I mean, that's kind of the point. Because if you just play a couple games, you probably end up 13-14 in the RPI. Because we're talking about neutral site top 10 games all week. Whereas if you lose, you're just kind of gone.
If I'm an area, I'm trying to figure out a way to get my team to 18 wins.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm 18-12, I'm probably in.
And they go to Fayetteville this weekend.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity, I guess.
Well, it's that for sure. But, boy, they're playing well. I mean,
17-7 in the SEC, beat Kentucky 2 out of 3 over the weekend. And then in the East, Vanderbilt is 18-6. Georgia is 16-8. So you're looking at – there's going to be – we know three of the byes in the SEC tournament. We know it's going to be Arkansas, Georgia, and Vanderbilt. And then as of right now, it's probably the winner of the Ole Miss State Series this weekend. So that's why this weekend is so big, because if you win the series, I mean, you're in a really, really good shape. You're in really, really good shape from a standpoint of getting one of those top four seeds, guaranteeing yourself two games, and then guaranteeing yourself you don't have to play on that Tuesday. So just a huge series. I think State's fine no matter what because of that RPI, but for Ole Miss, this thing is overly critical this weekend. It's just huge. Hard to quantify it as anything less, frankly.
No, absolutely. No, it's massive. Look, here's the I wrote this a little bit. They've won 5 of their last 6 to put themselves in position to make this be huge. You know, when they got through losing 2 out of 3 at Auburn, I don't think anybody really thought they'd be able to put themselves in position.
And
here they are. They've won 5 of their last 6 games and against good teams. And now a really good team comes in, and then they go play a weird team, and they've, you know, they They need to get two this weekend. Bottom line, if they get two this weekend, they're in great shape.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And if they get one, it's still doable.
Yeah, it's doable. You can go to Tennessee and win two.
Yeah.
But you want to take advantage of home field. That's.
It's not a great matchup for Ole Miss. It's going to be really difficult to beat Ethan Small and JT Ginn. They're going to have to get excellent efforts from Etheridge and Nikhazy, and frankly, they've got to win game three. The path here that makes a lot of sense, and now look, on paper with this Ole Miss team, nothing makes sense. It could go exactly the opposite. But on paper, you split one of the first two and then try to win game three.
Well, the way Nikhazy's gone, I like Ole Miss's chances on Saturday against almost anybody. He's just been terrific.
Yeah.
You know, he's been great. And he's kind of carried them a little bit, kind of all season, really. And then, Sunday, I mean, yesterday was crazier than most. But
Hoagland was fine yesterday. Wasn't bad, wasn't great, he was fine.
I didn't see any of,
yeah,
of
he
his
was fine.
By the time I got to it, it was
But States had questions on Sunday in game three too. I mean, you know what I mean. By the time you get to Sundays, you just hit and win the game, whatever it looks like.
Yeah, Sundays are supposed
there's
to be
nothing so- there's nothing beauty pageant about a Sunday in the SEC.
No, Sundays are supposed to be kind of crazy. So
Ole Miss is typically very, very good in the regular season on graduation weekends, double-decker, that kind of stuff. It's graduation weekend. It will be an absolute zoo in Oxford this weekend. So, yeah, you know, if you want some big things to happen, frankly, go earn it because it's right there. I mean, it's everything is right in front of them. There's no more of that, well, if this happens, no, just win baseball games. That's it. That's where they are right now.
I will tell you that starting on Thursday – in Oxford, weather is a bit of an issue. It looks like it gets better as the weekend progresses. Thursday, there's a 100% chance of rain. Thursday night, a 90% chance of rain. Friday, an 80% chance of rain, dropping to 60% on Friday night. Saturday, 50% all day, and Sunday, 40% trailing off as the day goes along. So it's too early to obsess about it, but if you're making plans to be here, you probably need to build in some variables because weather is potentially a factor.
It has killed their home series this year in the SEC. Just killed them. I mean, it's been a mess.
It's rained every Thursday in Oxford for the past 5 weeks. It's
That's
rained.
What I'm saying. I don't think they've had a series at home that hasn't been at least somewhat impacted in the SEC.
Yes. It's been a wet spring for sure.
They've got them all in though. They get them in.
Yeah, so they'll get them in this weekend too. I'm just telling people if you're making concrete plans, you probably should
you're
build in
a little bit. Yeah,
you probably should build in some cushion.
So, podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. They're getting local underwriting, understands your market, a leader in condo financing, and the float down option, so you can lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you just get the lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
We had a great time celebrating Blue Delta Jeans' 5-year anniversary on the square back in April. Maybe you missed it. You're worried that you aren't going to be able to get fitted for your pair of Blue Deltas until football season rolls back around. But don't fret, because that's not the case. These guys travel the country. They do trunk shows. They fit sports teams. They do golf tournaments. I know they were in Dallas and Nashville just recently by following their Instagram, which you can follow as well at Blue Delta Jeans on Instagram and on Twitter. If you'd like to inquire about hosting a private trunk show in your city, whether you're in Jackson or Birmingham or Atlanta or Dallas or Nashville, whatever the case may be, go to send them a DM on Twitter or Instagram, and then send them an email, info@bluedeltajeans.com. And one of the Blue Delta stylists will reach out to you with details. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person. There's no 10 buttons to push. There's no 5-minute wait. What there is Kasasa. It's the absolute best cash checking account. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000 and refund ATM fees nationwide. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. I referenced 10 Weekend Thoughts a little while ago. They're up at rebelgrove.com. They went up a little later than usual on a Sunday because of dance recitals and whatnot, but they're up nonetheless. And they are brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He is a big part of Savannah Square. It's a new 9-acre development, 7/10 of a mile from the Oxford downtown square, conveniently located east of North Lamar, just a short stroll from the Midtown Shopping Center and all of the establishments that are in and around the Midtown Shopping Center. Savannah Square will initially consist of 32 standalone detached structures ranging in size from about 1,100 square feet to about 2,400 square feet. The model home is available for your inspection at 215 William Street. The homes have wonderful layouts, impeccable finishes. You can check them out at the model. I've checked it out. They're really cool. Lots of options for you. So give Harry a call. Look at the new model. Get more information about this great new development while they are still available. You can view more at savannahsquareoxford.com or give Harry Alexander with REMAX Legacy Realty a call or text at 662-801-5621. And we're brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals there as well. So go in, tell Gene and Sandy you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com, and you'll get Rebel Savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
So we'll get into this now. Friday night, a lot of hysterics going on in the late innings. It was a one-run game going into the bottom of the eighth. Ole Miss had done a pretty good job just to kind of hang around for the most part. And then Daniel Cabrera hits a three-run home run to push it to 7-3 and ultimately end the game for most of the matter. Following that, Drew Bianco, as everybody knows, Mike's third son, who plays LSU, came in as a pinch hitter. He was hitting 182 on the season, I think with two home runs on the year coming in. He does not start for the most part on this team. And on the first pitch, a pitch that appeared to be designed to go down and away with a fastball, it was middle in, and he hit it a really long way over the left field wall. He gave a celebratory bat flip. He ran the bases, and Ole Miss ends up losing 8-3. From a game standpoint, the only thing, even a little bit, that it did is the game was pretty much decided. It was Ole Miss did load the bases in the ninth inning, so it prevented the tying run from getting to the plate. I'll say that. It became a bigger deal after the game when it was discovered that on January 25th, during LSU Media Day, Drew, seemingly joking, mentioned that Mike had told him the first pitch when they faced each other would be a first pitch fastball. It was a first pitch fastball. He hit it a long way. Ole Miss winning 2 out of 3 definitely removes this and makes it less of a deal. It was not the deciding run or anything. I joked with Matt Moscona last week. I said it'll probably be a pinch hit double in the eighth that wins the game. It was not that. It was a home run. And I got a couple different thoughts here. I'll let you chime in too. This is going to sound crazy considering how bad the message board was at times. I do think we've at least moved the conversation. I do think for the most part, except for the 5% or whatever it is, that we're no longer at least having the conversation about whether Mike should have allowed his kid to play at LSU or Ole Miss or whatever. I think we have finally moved away from that. I thought for the most part it stayed very central to just Friday night instead of the big overarching picture that, frankly, we've been talking about way too long. Do you agree with that?
Sort of. There's still a lot of people out there.
See, I think a lot is way exaggerating it. I think it's a very small vocal minority that is very vocal.
Maybe so. They're really vocal about Mike shouldn't have let his kid go to a rival. I just disagree with that. But I'm freely, openly admitting at the very beginning of this conversation, as I have repeatedly, that I'm in the vast minority of human beings. Who is just not into alma mater stuff. And that makes me odd. I admit it out loud. It makes me an oddity. It's strange. I get it. I went to three schools. I graduated from two of them, and I don't care. So I understand that's weird, but I don't think the fact that LSU and Ole Miss were our rivals should factor into whether Mike and Cammy. And to me, when you talk about the decisions, you have to say the words "and Cammy" because she's a human being too. The decision that they made about where their boys could or could not go to school. I think the fact that Ole Miss and LSU are rivals should not matter.
Yeah, I just don't think that topic's a huge deal anymore. And I think him not playing well, frankly, as weird as this is, has really helped that along.
Of course. It's one of the reasons that and Mike sort of – we'll get to this in a minute. I think that Mike has not handled this, and I understand why he hasn't. Let me preface that, because it's a private family thing, and frankly, the decision-making process is really nobody's business. He could have eliminated some of the angst by just coming out and more publicly talking about it.
He got out in front of it. He certainly got out in front of it. I mean, he found me that day to write a story. It's such a weird deal because and I'm almost kind of hesitant here because Mike has been very consistent on what happened and everything the entire time, and he has not deviated from that. And if he heard this conversation, he would tell me that I'm completely wrong. My opinion is that Drew simply wanted to play at LSU above all else, and Mike is somewhat protecting him. My opinion, that's it. I have really no factual basis for that whatsoever, but that's what I think. Whatever.
I can tell you just, and I don't know the kid. Now, he's a little older than my kids. Campbell's a senior this year, so Drew's a year ahead of Campbell.
Correct.
They casually know one another. They have some, you know, mutual friends. It's a small town, so it's not a huge high school. They all know each other, and I can only tell you what she says based on talking to her friends, which was that when LSU offered, he got super excited, and that was that.
Well, because my point being, to completely on face go, they could not have gone to Ole Miss no matter what. And I understand why Mike would do that. I get it. But that's saying that Drew goes, "Dad, I just want to stay home, and I please God, let me play for you." And Mike goes, "No, you cannot do that." I don't believe Mike would have done that.
Yeah, I don't.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I don't think that happened. But I think it's one of those deals where they probably, and again, this is Mike and Cammy. And if Cammy's listening to this wanting to be private, I understand, and I apologize in advance. I suspect that the two of them, the parents, sort of ingrained this idea into their heads earlier that, hey, I think it would be best if you didn't play for Mike. You don't get to be, and you don't get to be as a coach's son, one of the guys. You don't. It's different. And as a coach, having your son on the team, unless he is a bona fide superstar.
It worked for Dave Serrano because his kid was the Friday night pitcher.
Yeah, it worked for Wally Szczerbiak's dad because Wally Szczerbiak was the only NBA player on the team. It works if your kid is the best player on the team. Then it's a no-brainer. If your kid's not one of the best players on the team, if your kid's fighting for playing time like six or seven other kids, it is always, as a dad, in the back of your mind, you're saying, okay, if I play him, am I playing him because he's my kid? And if I don't play him, am I not playing him because I don't want it to look like I'm playing? And that's when you're already in a difficult job, and managing an SEC baseball team is a difficult job. Running an SEC program is a difficult job. When you're already in a difficult job, adding another layer of difficulty to it could make it miserable, could send it over the top, would be a way to lose your clubhouse, would be a way for your, you know, your kid's unhappy because he's not playing. So the kid's mom happens to be your wife. There become dynamics there that I get why you would want to avoid that. I totally understand it. In fact, if I think about it honestly, as a dad, I would be in the same boat.
You know, Drew has stupid power. I think he's going to be a really good player before he's done. He would not have started on this Ole Miss team. Just wouldn't have. There was nowhere for him to play on this team.
Right.
He wasn't going to beat out Zabowski or Ken or one of those guys.
Right.
The bat flip, I thought, was excitement. And I watched him the rest of the way. I would have had a different opinion had he kept his head down, he moved quickly, and he made sure to not even look toward his dad rounding third base.
He looked at nobody.
Yeah, he kept his head down so he could see his team and his frontal vision. So I thought he handled that fine. The bat flip doesn't bug me. Bat flips, for the most part, don't bug me. I think
if you don't want to give up a bat flip, don't.
I think they're kind of dumb at times, but I do get the excitement element of the situation.
His team had just taken a lead, and it is his team. He's part of that team. It was a big game for his team, and his team had just taken a lead. The place was excited. He had not had a home run in a while, I don't think. If I'm wrong, I stand corrected. He got every bit of a pitch that missed its spot by 2 feet. I mean, the spot, I mean, I'm not criticizing the Ole Miss kid who threw it. I mean, pitchers make mistakes. I watched Michael Wacha with the Cardinals. I wrote about this in 10 Thoughts, 15, 16 hours later, miss his spot to Taylor Davis in a Major League Baseball game, missed it by 2 feet, and Taylor Davis hit a ball. Taylor Davis, who had never hit a home run in the major leagues, hit a ball a good 440. So, I mean, you know, when you miss a mistake and you put it in a wheelhouse, someone swinging a club can hit it a long way, and that's what happened. And you know, he was excited, and he did the bat flip, and he pimped it a little bit. But I don't – like, you and I have talked about this with other stuff. I don't really have a problem with that. I mean, it's okay. I mean, it's not what I would do, but I'm 49, and I grew up in a period where you wouldn't dare do that. It doesn't bother me when young guys – look, if you get to hit a ball 450 feet, you ought to be able to watch it a moment, in my opinion. So I didn't have a problem with any of that. And he didn't do anything wrong running the bases. In fact, he ran them pretty quick, and he kept his head down. I mean, he studied the dirt. And when he rounded third, he slapped his third base coach's hand, and then he looked towards his dugout, and I'm sure was relieved to get to that spot in the home run trot. I just didn't have a problem with any of that part of it at all.
So give Mike some credit too, because when frankly he was pissed at his own team at that point, but he had to know cameras were going to be on him, and he made sure. I mean, because your kid is hitting a home run, he did not show any emotion whatsoever. He was frankly pissed at the moment. He kind of waited to see if Drew caught his eye, and then he moved his gaze.
Yeah, that half inning was not one that Mike Bianco was thrilled with, and more than anything, he was unhappy with the three runs that they had given up.
Yeah, the Cabrera home run was the problem. So, in saying all that, as we close the segment in a second, I do have a thing though, and I think you and I disagree on this. I think that so much of this though has to be understood, not saying accepted. I'm not saying you should say, hey, everybody's opinion is exactly right, but understood that this is a very emotional climate for a lot of people. There's a lot of people, money, time, everything, heavily invested in Ole Miss baseball with a lot of capital put into that. And I do think you have to be aware of things that can trigger those emotional responses. And I did think that, even joking, the fastball thing was a really bad idea. I thought it was somewhat, and I'm not blaming Drew, he's 18 years old. This isn't about blame. But from a pragmatic standpoint, I understand how that becomes a hot button thing. And I do think that it probably would have been well versed to make sure that everyone involved goes, hey, look, this thing's important to a lot of people. I get that it's our family. Don't do anything incendiary or could be considered such. And I did think that the video, even months later, was a really bad look from that standpoint. I really did.
I get that. It was January. I think he was clearly joking. He's a kid. He was nervous. If you go back and watch the video, you can tell that he's kind of nervous. There's tons of reporters around him. He didn't bring it up on his own. It was a question, and I think he was trying to disarm a little bit by joking. I don't believe for one minute that because to believe that in that moment Mike Bianco said, hey, let's serve up a home run ball to my kid, you've got to believe that the catcher's in on it, that the pitcher's in on it, and that you as a coach are not at all concerned about what the ramifications with that would be, which is frankly absurd. And the pitch was designed to be out and away. And
look, he definitely didn't do it, but why would the pitcher and catcher have to be in on it? You just throwing a pitch.
Because if he throws the pitch where it was designed to be thrown.
Oh, yeah, I'm not arguing that.
He's not hitting it 450 feet. Based on the results from the rest of the weekend, he doesn't handle the out and away fastball very well at all. He didn't hit it the rest of the weekend. They struck him out on Saturday with pitches that were executed. Execute the pitch, and it's not a 450-foot home run. I mean, if we're really going to, and I'm not saying you, anybody out there, is going to believe that Mike Bianco intentionally served up a home run ball to his kid, then, I mean, I can't participate in the conversation any longer because I think that's insane.
Yeah, no, there's not a chance in hell.
There's zero chance of it.
It was still a really dumb quote.
And
it can be both.
It was. I'm going to probably make you mad and a lot of people mad when I say this. They don't owe you explanations, you plural. Get over yourselves, plural. It's still at the end of the game, a dad and a family and a kid and a baseball series, and the way that he was pitched the rest of the weekend proves precisely, in my opinion, what I'm saying, which is Mike Bianco's trying to get that kid out and every other kid wearing the LSU uniform out. Because that's his job. But sometimes pitchers have to execute pitches. The pitch, and I'm not picking on, I think it was Austin Miller. I'm not picking on Austin Miller because he's a much better pitcher than I've ever been in my entire life and ever will be. But he missed his spot badly. It was a very poorly executed pitch, and it got crushed like a lot of poorly executed pitches get crushed. Some of the best pitchers in baseball, when you hang a slider, bye-bye. If you execute that slider, strike three. It's sports. It's no big deal. I think the people who get overly emotional about this, I think you need to take a step back. I really do, and reevaluate what it is that you're looking at. It's a kid that made a decision to go someplace else. They're going to play each other a weekend a year. He's going to come to Oxford next year. Here's the thing. All those kids on that Ole Miss team, based on Twitter and stuff, they really like the kid. They're friends. It's just baseball. I just thought I thought it was an overreaction. I thought it was a bad overreaction that was I can't ever pronounce the word, exacerbated, I suppose, by
the fact
that, yeah, that was emphasized based on the fact that so many people in the Ole Miss fan base, right or wrong, good or bad, and I get it, have decided that, you know what, I think it's time for change. I think this program is stale. This program has lost momentum. Even though the numbers metrically don't support that, I get it. There is still this fallout from that Monday against Tennessee Tech, and then the fact that Ole Miss has been in one super regional in the last 9 or 10 years, whatever the number is, that's got people just on edge. And the fact that, here's the truth, if that exact same pitch gets thrown and any other player on that LSU team hits the ball 450 feet, nobody's saying anything.
Well, I don't think they're saying anything if they don't have a quote, though.
Yeah, but the quote, if you'll take a step back and look at the quote, it's very clear that it's a joke. I mean, otherwise you believe it to be true, and if you believe it to be true, well, then it's a fine.
Well, no. There's a middle ground. There's a smart and unnecessary element to it.
Yeah. Well,
no, there's a middle. I'm not saying Mike did it. I'm saying that it would have been easy to just not give the ammunition. That's my point.
It would have, but he's a kid. He's just a kid. I mean, he's a freshman in college. I mean, it was a nervous day in January. I mean,
it's likely when Mike sees it, he goes, oh, shit.
Sure. I mean, and I guess the kid could have said, you know, I can't talk about that series against Ole Miss. I can't talk
about it.
Well,
you could just say he didn't tell me what pitch is coming.
Yeah, but he was joking, is my point. It was obvious. I went back and watched it. It's obvious.
Well, I know, but I do think you're missing an emotional element of it just being stupid. Like,
I am, and I admit that because it's not emotional to me.
Well, it's not emotional to me either, though.
I get to people who
But I understand what they're saying is my point.
But what they're saying is they believe that Mike Bianco told the kid, here comes a fastball, be ready.
Yeah, I think there's a middle
and
ground
I don't,
there.
And I don't believe that.
I just think there's a middle ground there.
I guess.
I think you can go, hey, that was really dumb without going, oh, yeah, Mike served him one up.
It was dumb of the kid, but he's a kid.
Well, yeah, I'm not hanging him over it.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
I mean, like what, Drew. He's fine.
The alternative is he, I mean, he was joking. I mean... If we've got to get buttoned down about college baseball, for God's sake, I mean, he didn't know what the situation was going to be in January. And if he did, man, Drew, go to Vegas and make some money, champ. I mean, he didn't know that. It's silly. There's a segment of the Ole Miss fan base that by God wants to proverbially, I put this in quotes, hang Mike Bianco. They just want him gone. And I get it. I mean, that's fine. But when you they just provided this ammunition or whatnot, and it's just this emotional, the roller coaster of this season has driven some people kind of batty.
It's gonna make for a weird June. It was always gonna be a weird June.
It was always gonna be a weird June. I mean, look, if they go 19-11 and host a regional and lose it, we're right back where we were a year ago. Where you have to decide that whole deal about what is it that you're basing it on. Because if you tell anybody before the season, hey, you're going to go 19-11 and host a regional, in a vacuum, you go, well, that's a successful year. But if you go 19-11 and host a regional and lose to, hell, I don't know. You could better tell me who a two seed's going to be.
Baylor, whatever, pick a school.
Whatever, Baylor. You lose to Baylor on Monday. You know, on a Monday night in Oxford, you lose to Baylor, and that's the end of it. And Baylor goes and plays a super regional at Virginia or somewhere. I have no idea. I don't know. Whatever. Then everybody's going to go, oh, my God, let's fire him. And we're right back where we were a year ago, which is how do you judge the program? Do you judge the program by regular season? Or do you at some point have to look at it and go, you know what, they have a postseason issue, and regular season results beat by damn, we're going to fire him. And we're not, yeah, it's, yeah, we're, I mean, absolutely. All of that stuff's coming up. I mean, the SEC tournament's in 2 weeks, and if Ole Miss takes care of business the next 2 weeks, I think we could almost ignore it and nobody would pay attention to it. Because after last year when they won it and looked like world beaters and then turned around literally 8 days later and got eliminated, no one's gonna put any emphasis on what happens in Hoover.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Take a break. Today the podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. You know, they'll handle all the basic maintenance for you, but they'll do other stuff as well. They are premium lawn care throughout northern Mississippi, and they do things such as custom playgrounds, retaining walls, pool decks, outdoor living spaces, paper patios, forestry mulching, and much more. The path to your dream backyard easier than you think. Go MasterCuts.com for a free quote or 662-607-7773. Told you, got hydrangeas out front. They've planted some daylilies that have started to bloom. So you can get those things as well. Again, 662-607-7773.
Podcast also brought to you by John Edwards of Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you've been thinking about that golf trip with the guys you'll never forget, an anniversary trip she'll never forget, whether you dreamed of playing St. Andrews or sitting at a cafe in Paris, talk to John Edwards before you try to do it yourself. If you're thinking about some of the summer trips, cruises, resorts in Florida, the Caribbean, guaranteed reserved tee times at golf courses in Scotland and Ireland, that kind of thing, you need to get in touch with John. He's a part of Virtuoso. It's a worldwide network of travel partners that allows John to supply his clients with added values and unique benefits that are simply not available to other travelers. John traveled the globe for 37 years before getting into the travel business. He knows the extra attention that's needed to make a special trip one that creates a lifetime of unique memories. So give him a call, give him some parameters, give him a budget, and let him give you options, and you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. 901-494-3387 is the number. You can send him an email, jedwards@regencytravel.net. First-time clients can save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. It's a podcast that's also brought to you by the Westin Jackson. If you are doing business in Jackson, Westin Jackson's the place to stay. It's a fantastic hotel owned by friends of ours. It's home to Soul Spa. It's the ultimate luxury spa experience in downtown Jackson. It's also home to Estelle Wine Bar and Bistro. You can just go downstairs, sip on a craft cocktail, or enjoy their curated wine list. It's open for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. Chef Caden does a terrific job. You will love it, and we would appreciate you telling them that you heard about it here on the podcast. We're also brought to you by Pinnacle Trust. Pinnacle Trust, based in Madison, Mississippi. It represents clients in 24 states, has advisors in 3 states. Founded in 1997, Pinnacle Trust provides detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much more. At Pinnacle Trust, investing is treated like a commodity and decisions are made using objective information and research, not emotions. So regardless of your level of wealth, Pinnacle Trust will sit down with you, listen to your goals, study your expenses, and put forth a comprehensive, detailed financial and retirement plan. Cookie cutter financial planners, I should say, put you in a box. At Pinnacle Trust, a box is built just for you. To learn more about Pinnacle Trust, go to pintrust.com. That's PINNtrust.com. Mention you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast. You'll get 10% off your first year's fee.
Podcast also brought to you by G&M Pharmacy there on South Lamar and Oxford. Deliver local to your home or workplace. I have that done pretty often, and they'll transfer your medications easily. If you're with another pharmacy, just call G&M, and they will take care of you. 662-236-2222. A lot of people trying out the CBD oil we've been talking about for a couple months now. It's offered in multiple different forms, including the oil, the soft gel capsules, or the topical salves. It's been helping people with depression, anxiety, pain, insomnia, and more, and is FDA approved. It is legal in all 50 states. It does not have any crazy side effects, so you can see if it helped you as well. 662-236-2222. So what were your impressions of the way the Derby ended on Saturday?
It's really kind of funny because we were watching it, and at the time the Cubs and Cardinals were like in the 8th inning, and it was 5-5, and so Carson and I kind of had an eye on that as well. And literally the moment that the race ended, Javi Baez hit a home run to put the Cubs ahead. And so we went from one TV to the other to see what was going on. And then we stayed in here and we watched the end of the Cubs Cardinals game. And then Laura and I were going to go run an errand, and I was actually trying to turn the TV off, and I ended up hitting the channel return button, and it goes back to the Kentucky Derby. And they're still at that moment kind of having this debate, and I'm like, what the hell? And so I started watching it, and then they showed the replay. And I guess I don't know the first thing about horse racing. It's kind of what I wrote about Ole Miss softball, where everybody's complaining about the umpiring. I'll take other people's word for it. I have absolutely no idea. I wouldn't know a horse racing foul if I saw one. But when I started hearing the people say, yeah, that's a foul, you can't, the horse can't do that, or the jockey can't let the horse do that, I was still sort of surprised when they ultimately reversed it, because there's no chance that the horse that won is going to win the Triple Crown. And maybe the fact that they've had a couple of Triple Crown winners has eliminated the need for that now. I wonder if the drought were still going, if they would have let the best horse lose.
Yeah, what were they called? The stewards, is that what they're called? I think so, they did not handle it very well. I know nothing about horse racing either, so let's put that off the top. It was probably the right call. I completely understood, because let's put this in perspective, and I think Sally Jenkins wrote about this today. We've had a lot of horse deaths lately. The sport is completely under siege in a way that they deserve. I think, 23 horses have been killed at Santa Anita in the last however long. That was so close to two hooves clipping and potentially killing multiple horses on the track at the Kentucky Derby when that happened. So yeah. I completely understand why the foul was called. I'll tell you what I'm a little annoyed about, though, is that the jockey of the horse that was declared the winner, what was his name? Country something? Anyway, whatever.
I can't remember.
See, there you go. I'll be able to tell you Maximum Security for how many ever years. I won't have a chance in heck to tell you who actually won the Derby. So, whatever that horse's name was, Country, County, whatever. His jockey, though, when he was getting interviewed, he goes, oh, yeah, I call a foul because he turned me sideways. He didn't do crap to you. Come on. Like, say it was a foul and I might benefit from it, but don't lie when we got video. He wasn't the horse impacted. It was the other cat that was impacted.
Yeah, you know where I thought they kind of dropped the ball? And I
not talking to that dude.
I know in the past we've you know, criticized Pat Forty. Pat Forty's column from Churchill Downs was really, really good. It was really informative. And he quoted a couple of people saying that the jockey on top of the one horse, the one that got clipped, War of Wills, I think was the horse's name. He said that that jockey had a split second right there to make a decision about, do you basically pull your horse out of the race? Because if you pull up on your horse right there, it's over. He's not getting back. And it's a very sloppy track. These are 3-year-old horses. They're juveniles. By doing what he did, he said that I can't remember who was quoted. It was a really informative piece. And then I've read more for other people kind of writing some of the same stuff, that it would have been catastrophic potentially. The two horses go down. All the horses behind them go down. There would have been the real risk of human loss in addition to equine loss. It potentially would have been the end of that sport because, let's face it, there are millions of people like me and you and others who I'm not watching Santa Anita. I'm not watching the Arkansas Derby. I'm not watching that stuff. But the Kentucky Derby comes on and you find out what time the post is and you flip to it. And, like, we flipped to it, and Laura was in the living room and watching it, and she said, and I always joke with her, who you for, you know? And she's like, I just don't want any of them to get hurt. I don't want them to get hurt. And there would have been many of them hurt, probably many of them that would have had to be put down. I mean, from what I read, that's not a dramatic thing to say, that it would have been chaos. And can you imagine on national television in that moment, that happening with millions of eyeballs on it? Things that can't recover. I don't know that a sport could recover from something like that. So that's the jockey that is the hero in this was the jockey on top of War of Wills, because that horse was making its move. And if you don't hold that horse up, that horse is trained to keep going. And it would have been really bad. So they probably got it right from a call standpoint, I guess. It's just, I don't know. You know, later in the Triple Crown, there aren't as many horses, and it's a little cleaner, and it's a lot more interesting to watch. And I know you can't control how many horses are in it, but maybe there's too many horses.
Maximum Security, this is not a surprise, filing an appeal today with whatever the commission is, and is not running the Preakness. That actually that surprises me a little bit, because clearly a very talented horse, clearly a horse that would have had a shot had this thing progressed a little bit, and
he's devastated. There's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way mentally. There's no way that mentally Maximum Security is.
He didn't even get up this morning, did he?
No, I mean, you talk about the 10th inning. That's one baseball game. There would have been more baseball games. Had Ole Miss lost, I mean, they still would have gotten to play this weekend. He spent his entire life thinking about nothing but Saturday. He gets it done, and then he has it taken away from him. There's no way he's going to go run the Preakness. No chance, man. He's going to have some therapy before he can get past that. I mean, I don't even know that it's realistic to expect him to run the Belmont.
They're his owner or whatever, at minimum losing up to $11 million over this decision.
Now he will need therapy.
Yeah. About 11 mil was the price that they said right after it happened. So, this is actually, I mean, this is where though the sport, like, be transparent with everybody. The stewards could do a much better job. This is the Maximum Security owner or trainer or somebody. He says, we're going to file an appeal today with the State Racing Commission. Right after the race, I had the trainer call the stewards and ask very nicely if they'd be willing to visit with us after the races were over. I said, we'll stay here till 11 or 12 at night, whatever they want. And they said, absolutely not. We will not show any film until Thursday. We didn't really have an alternative legally. The appeal has to be filed within 48 hours. Like, just quit making this cloak and dagger. Like, We're complicating this for no reason.
You would think that all of the officiating stuff that's happened in all the other sports would make organizations want to be more transparent, but it doesn't.
No, they lock it down.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I would love to know what they saw specifically that said, okay, well, that's why. And then here's what's interesting to me is if you determine that War of Wills could have won the race.
Yeah, how do you not make him? I mean, now, look, it looked like he was fading. I get it.
Well, it's hard to say because he was making his run, and then that happened, and then he faded because the jockey had put the brakes on him.
Yeah, the horse that actually got the roses around it had no chance of winning that race.
No, he wasn't winning. He was never winning, and he had a pretty clean run.
Yeah.
So I don't – and again, I'm not questioning it because I don't understand it. I don't know how it works.
Wes, the owner of Maximum Security, criticizing Churchill Downs in the Derby, he said he understood that his horse came over in front of another horse, but he said that's going to happen in such a big field of horses. The Kentucky Derby allows 20 entrants, the biggest field in North American thoroughbred racing. You shouldn't have 20 horses in the Derby. Churchill Downs, because they're a greedy organization, has 20 horses rather than 14, like you have in the Oaks, the Breeders' Cup, every other race in America. Just because you can make more money, they're willing to risk horses' lives and people's lives to do that. I'm not a fan of that. I think you should have 14 like every other race.
There's too many damn horses in the field. I mean, I was watching it going, it's so crowded. And then throw in the conditions. And so you've got all the mud flying up, all the noise. I mean, they are animals at the end of the day. And you do wonder, like, just – I don't think I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I'm gonna guess that I don't think Maximum Security was thinking to himself, "Hey, you know what? I got to move over to the right to cut this guy off here."
Like in Days of Thunder when they try to pass on the outside and you wouldn't let them. Rowdy Burns and Cole Trickle.
I don't think he was saying, "Hey, rub, it ain't racing if there's no rubbing, or rubbing's part of racing, or whatever." I just think the horse moved. I just think he's a big, strong animal, and he moved. And I mean, thank God nobody got hurt, first and foremost. But I don't think there was anything malicious about it. I don't think the jockey was trying to cut anybody off. I don't. I just don't. At the end of the day, I don't know. I'm all over the place on this, and I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I lost some sleep over it. I'm not. It just felt weird. And then when they award that horse, it's like that horse didn't – not only did it not win, it wasn't particularly close, and it wasn't impacted. So I guess that's just standard. Whoever finished second becomes first place, and he finished second. So
good enough.
I'll tell you this, if I'm the people that have the TV rights to the Preakness.
Oh, gosh. My Derby winner is a 65-1 shot that didn't win it. Thanks.
Ain't nobody watching, boys. There's no point in doing a 3-hour show because no one's watching.
That horse is not winning the crown.
No.
Unless there's nobody else runs. I mean, Maximum Security's out. Omaha Beach is out.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I do look forward to the interview with Maximum Security. Yeah. Because he and Tom Rinaldi are going to have a moment.
He looked crushed.
God, that would be wouldn't that be great television if Tom Rinaldi, if they did a kind of a parody and Tom Rinaldi did with all the music and stuff, interviewed Maximum Security. God, that'd be great.
The only legal precedent requiring Kentucky Derby disqualification came in 1968 when Dancer's Image won and was disqualified several days later after trace amounts of a then banned drug was found in his system.
Yeah, he was juicing.
Yeah.
That's a different deal. I've never watched a horse. I mean, they say it happens all the time where a horse gets disqualified afterwards, but I've never seen it before.
Yeah. What we don't have to worry about is that no point is everybody going to go, hey, you think you can beat Secretariat's time? You think this is the year it falls? No, it's not the year it falls.
No, not this year. I feel pretty safe.
Dylan and I had a 5-minute discussion about this the other day, which is incredibly dumb on the things you could talk about. You know, people, because of just time and training and all sort of things, are just better athletes now than whatever. Or horses not, like, because training is more specialized now than in the 60s, I would assume. Why do horses not get better over time? Nutrition's better, training's better.
That's a good question. I don't know.
I mean, Secretariat has not been challenged since then.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer. It'd be worth asking. We need to get a horse racing person on.
Do we have one of those?
Remember we did once get a horse racing guy on.
Yeah, it was Jeffrey's buddy. But it was a gambler, not somebody.
We got a guy that called. Yeah, remember?
Oh, Travis Stone. Yeah.
Stone, we got him on because his call was so awesome.
That's right.
I'll reach out to him and see if we can't, because I think we're both a little interested in this. We could find out, was it the right call, and then we could ask about just. It might be one of those deals where you just can't genetically engineer something any more perfectly, that
they cracked down on testing, and that's been the thing. I don't know. I mean, I'm asking. I'm not saying Secretariat was juicing, but
whoa, because I was going to say. I mean, are you dropping that allegation right here on the Oxford Exxon podcast that Secretariat was the Barry Bonds of his generation? Because he can't defend himself.
He cannot.
It's another question that we could ask of Maximum Security.
Maximum Security did not look like a very large horse either. He looked very small compared to the other horses in the race Saturday. It worked. He won.
I mean, there's more important things than size.
There are, yes.
Yeah, that's what he would say.
Yeah.
He'd say size doesn't matter.
Yeah, was it?
It's all about heart.
I'm really impressed that speed impresses you. That's going to bode well for me. Not the quote from friends, whatever. anyway. Go ahead.
Seven South Tailgating has recently been coined the best tailgating service in Oxford, receiving unanimous votes across multiple polls, and there's a reason for this. Although there are dozens of service providers to choose from, Seven South is different. Kyle and his team work directly with each individual customer to customize their service to each group's specific needs and requests. With over a decade of experience in the Grove, the Seven South team is there when you need them. As one customer recently said, I've bounced around to several service providers over the years and finally came across Seven South. If you use Seven South once, you'll never tailgate without them again. Call them directly at 662-321-1682 or visit 7SouthTailgating.com. Warm weather is here. It's finally here. With it comes the inevitable debate of sock or no sock with your loafers, so save your feet and your shoes from making their own impression. Step into spring with some no-shows from Dead Soxy. You really need to experience the difference a quality sock makes. So go to deadsoxy.com, enter the code REBELGROVE at checkout to receive 30% off all orders, including sale items. These no-shows are the same quality you already love and enjoy with their traditional dress socks, and these come with the no-slip guarantee. So go to deadsoxy.com, check out their no-show collection, and remember to enter promo code REBELGROVE at checkout for 30% off all orders. Guests will join us this week on the Patterson & Earhart Hotline. Patterson & Earhart, attorneys at law, specialize in personal injury law and real estate law, but theirs is a general practice that can handle any of your legal needs. When you contact Patterson & Earhart, you speak to one of the partners in the firm, and that's who handles your case, not some paralegal at a faceless corporate firm. If you think you have a legal issue, if you think you may have a legal issue upcoming, if you just need a little legal advice, take advantage of being a podcast listener. Get in touch with John Calvin Patterson and or Wes Earhart. They're Ole Miss guys. They're local guys. When you call them, you're going to get one of them on the phone within the same day, guaranteed. So whether you've been injured in a car wreck or you have other legal issues, give them a call, 662-526-1992, or check out their website, pelaws.com. Your initial consultation is free.
On this day in 1998, Kerry Wood throws the greatest game ever pitched. According to the Bill James game score method, in his first career start, Wood struck out 20 batters in the win. I remember that one.
I was working at the Birmingham Post-Herald. My shift ended around 1 o'clock, and I got back to our house And I turned it on, and I watched in absolute awe as he made one of the best offensive lineups of that day, the Houston Astros. That was Jeff Bagwell, Craig Biggio, Derek Bell.
Jeff Kent on that team?
Moises Alou. They were good. They were good. It was a good team. It was an Astro team that went to the playoffs. He made them look silly. He had guys missing pitches about 3 feet. It was the Astros got an infield single that probably should have been an error. It was early in the game. I think Ricky Gutierrez hit it. Kevin Ory kind of booted it. Should have been an error and would have been a no-hitter. Kerry Wood was unhittable that day. You'd watch the Astros, and again, we're talking about Hall of Fame players, go back to the dugout just sort of shaking their heads like, hey, what do you do? It was – to this day, yeah, it was the most dominant pitching performance I've ever seen.
Who's the catcher? It says Martinez. Who's
it? Yeah, it was it was a kid who was not one of their regular guys. He had just gotten called up. He was a rookie. I can't remember his name, but he caught that day.
Yeah, I'm looking at a photo from it right now.
It was that was Mark Grace, and
yeah, the picture I have has Wood, a catcher named Martinez, and then Mark Grace kind of over his shoulder.
Yeah, go back and watch the highlights of that. You'll the stuff he was throwing was just unworldly. Like he threw a I'm watching a pitch of it right now. He threw a slider to Brad Ausmus, who's a pretty good major league player. Brad Ausmus played a long time. They don't employ you forever if you can't hit. It's a slider that bounces. Martinez couldn't field it. It bounced in the left-hand batter's box. Brad Ausmus was a right-handed hitter. It probably went 58 feet, and Brad Ausmus swung. The spin must have just been unbelievable. Kerry Wood was one of those guys, by the way, not to interrupt. He was one of those guys that in high school the coach threw him both ends of a doubleheader. It's believed that at once in high school he threw 250 pitches on the same day. He had UCL issues and ultimately, you know, had a pretty decent career, had his career cut short based on the abuse that he took in high school.
Really?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean his stuff, man, was electric.
Apparently, I think it's on our message board. You've probably seen it. This graphic, terrible video of the dude getting killed by the snake in the circus act. It actually happened in the fall, apparently, but the video is just now surfacing publicly.
I don't want to see it. Please, people, don't send me that. Please don't. Please don't.
This?
No, and I don't want to see it. Someone died. I don't want to see
it. Well, they may have died. We're not sure. They were seriously injured, for sure.
Was it a cobra?
No, it was a distressing video shows circus trainer with giant snake in front of horrified crowd, essentially. It's like one of those open-air circuses that travels around Russia, and maybe even illegal, and there's video of literally the snake just getting the dude in the middle of the thing.
Yeah, please don't send me that.
It's on the message board.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the warning.
Uh-huh. Just heads up there.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I know everybody jokes about it, and I joke about it, and I know it's weird and funny and stuff, but, man, I have snake nightmares that it's terrifying to everybody in my house. I scream the way I scream, apparently. It's uncontrolled fear.
I talked to a guy yesterday who told a story about being bitten by a copperhead and what that was like.
I'm going to guess it really hurt.
Hurt a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Drove himself to the hospital.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Called a buddy just in case, like, something happened and he didn't get there. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's no thanks. I got it. It's for me, it's just, it's worst case.
Little true thing here. Not true. I don't know why I said that. Makes no sense. But it is true. That wasn't what word I was trying to use. Congrats to Floyd Allen making some waves in a Seahawks mini camp. Just a rookie camp. We'll see what happens. Obviously, a long way to go to make the team. But reading from Michael Dugar, who writes for The Athletic Seattle. He says, tryout wide receiver Floyd Allen, a teammate of DK Metcalf at Ole Miss, had two touchdowns today after the second one, caught in double coverage. He did a backflip. That was fun. Another Seahawks writer mentioning that Allen actually was getting out of breaks better than any wide receiver on the Seahawks work roster.
You talk about kids you cheer for. He's one of those great kids that we all –
Hey, we might all have to apologize to Russell Johnson because he said for a while he'd play in the NFL.
He did.
He's been hard-lined on Floyd Allen would play in the NFL.
I remember that.
So, Floyd Allen doing some nice things, at least, in a rookie minicamp with the Seahawks.
I don't think Jacob Peeler's all that surprised.
Yeah.
Peeler advocated for him all the way through. And people said, well, why didn't he play more at Ole Miss? Well, the cats in front of him were pretty good.
Yeah, you could be a pretty good wide receiver and be sixth on that depth chart.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when there's DK Metcalf and there's A.J. Brown and there's DeMarcus Lodge and Elijah Moore and
– Braylon Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that deal could be – there's only one ball.
And Dawson Knox.
There's more than one ball, but there's only one at a time.
Yeah, there is more than one ball.
Yeah, they use lots of balls during the game, but only one per play. That would be interesting if you allowed two ball play.
Make it really complicated for the defense.
It would make it – yeah, it'd be hard to defend that.
Yeah. All right, back tomorrow on the podcast. A lot of stuff at rebelgrove.com, baseball, 10 thoughts, recruiting, and the like. Maybe some basketball news this week. Who knows the way things are going with that. So we'll have anything that pops up as the week moves on, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.